You're listening to the Texas Standard. Bacon, jeans, and beer. No, we are not describing another Texas Saturday night. We are trying to take note of something that is seldom noted, how some of the things we take most for granted are, in fact, at stake in talks resuming this week between Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. The fate of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, probably doesn't keep you up at night, but maybe Texans should be paying a bit more attention. For as Anna Swanson of the New York Times reports, the outcome just might have more of an impact on your everyday life than most imagine. Anna, thanks so much for speaking with the Texas Standard. This is a neat idea, spotlighting three things that are quintessentially American. Should we start with bacon? What do you think?
Sure, that's a fun one to start with.
Okay, I guess I always thought that bacon was, in fact, an American product that I would imagine would be exported. What exactly happens with bacon, and why does NAFTA come into play here?
Well, that's true. I mean, bacon is an American product, and a lot of it is exported, particularly to both Canada and Mexico. But some of it is imported as well. So one of the stories I wanted to tell here is about how the Canadian and American supply chains for pork are actually quite integrated. And so one thing that sprung up over the course of this free trade deal that's knit together these economies of North America is that a lot of Canadian farmers now specialize in what are called feeder pigs. So piglets that are born in Canada and then shipped to American farms when they're just a few months old. Huh. And that makes sense for them because farmers in the Midwest have a lot of cheap corn and soybeans to feed the pigs. They also have a lot more slaughterhouses. So you might end up with a situation where a pig is born in Canada, shipped to the United States to kind of be raised and slaughtered, and then maybe shipped back to Canada in the form of a pork cutlet or bacon.
I see. This is kind of an important point here because we often think of exports and imports as sort of one-way streets, in a sense. But whenever you're talking about something that has been made or processed, taken to that second level in particular, you're quite often talking about multiple journeys across a border or two.
Absolutely. And I think people often recognize this with a product, for example, like an automobile. You know that your car has, you know, maybe thousands of parts that come from different locations. And under NAFTA, that trade agreement is certainly important for those manufacturers to source different kinds of products from Canada or the United States or Mexico. But the point I'm making here is that it's also relevant for something that seems fairly simple, like an agricultural supply chain. And actually, there are a lot of food products that go back and forth across borders as well.
You know, everyone thinks of jeans as being all American. I was a little crestfallen to learn that the last pair of Wranglers was stitched in the U.S. in 2005.
There's, you know, nothing that seems kind of more American than a pair of Wrangler jeans, right?
They were
originally designed for rodeo cowboys, and that company did cease stitching together the jeans in the United States in about 2005. And now they make about half of them in Mexico and half elsewhere. But an important part of the story is that even though those jeans are sewed together in countries where the cost of labor tends to be cheaper because, you know, that process requires a lot of labor, there are a lot of other inputs to the products that come from the United States. So the company, you know, definitely wanted to share the fact that a lot of the fabric, the threads, the cotton that's used to make the fabric, the buttons, all of these different things are sourced from the United States. And then a lot of the design and the marketing of its products also create more American jobs. And they actually say that over 70% of the material in a Mexican-made product comes from American companies.
And a lot of that cotton comes from Texas, probably Southeast Texas, if I'm not mistaken. But now let's move to a product that's near and dear to a lot of Texans' hearts, and that would be beer. We do import a lot of beer when folks aren't drinking Shiner. But again, we're talking about this cross-pollination of content, really.
That's right. Yeah. So Mexican beer has become much bigger in the United States, in part due to the growth of the Hispanic population, but also just because, you know, brands like Corona and Tecate have become a lot more popular. But you know, even when you're drinking a Mexican beer that's brewed in Mexico, that too has a lot of American ingredients. So Mexican brewers buy a lot of their hops, a lot of their grains from the United States. The U.S. is a major exporter of grains to Mexico. And even things like glass bottles or yeast might come from the United States as well.
So what happens this week? I know that there are Mexican presidential elections coming up in July. And I guess if I were a trade negotiator, I don't know how much I'd want to pin an agreement to something that could be upended in just a few months.
That's right. So in the past, the negotiators have emphasized that it would be great to finish up their negotiations very quickly and get a deal sometime in the next few months. And so they've really been thinking of this round, which just started last weekend in Montreal, Canada, as a really pivotal round to make progress, because so far we haven't seen a lot of compromise. There's still quite a bit of distance between what the United States wants and what the Canadian and Mexicans are advocating. On the other hand, in comments recently, the president, President Trump, mentioned that he might be open to waiting until after the Mexican elections to conclude NAFTA. And I'm not sure exactly, you know, what that means for the deal. I do think, depending on the results of the Mexican election, it could become a little trickier if you have a different political party all of a sudden that you have to, you know, renegotiate or finish the deal with.
This is a terrific way to get your head around what's at stake in NAFTA. Anna Swanson has written it for the New York Times. We'll have a link to it at texasstandard.org. Ms. Swanson, thanks so much for speaking with the Texas Standard.
Thank you.